Hi, this is Dana Gould, and you're listening to New Dissident Radio, where we've finally gotten the video out of audio video.
Hello, and welcome to Ardent Atheist, where reason reigns supreme, not dogs and fish. Today's episode brought to you by billions of years of evolution. Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hi, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the intertubes, and as the lead singer of Pendulette's No God Band, which headlined last week at TAM 2012 in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. I know that's confusing the people in the room right now, but it's true. You can find links to our guest website, join our Twitter and Facebook feed, subscribe to our premium 90-minute full-length episodes, and our email address is at ardentatheist.com.
If you'd like to take part in the live chat moderated by the unstoppable cyborg that is Joe Swam, go to the Ardent Atheist website at ardentatheist.com, click on the Wall of Reason link, join in and chat us up.
And please go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast for free, and write a review. Help us get in the top 10. Or go to ardentatheist.com/premium and subscribe to our premium
content
for a measly $10 per year.
Go subscribe.
That's right. Please.
Do it.
Be nice.
Fuck off.
It's okay. We only have two rules on the show. Rule number one.
Guests may plug anything they want because we sure as hell are. Go subscribe.
And rule number two. If your listener has ever been offended by anything, get a sledgehammer and destroy your computer now. This show has no restrictions on language or
content.
And certainly has nothing for you, you free thought blogging chick named tomato cookie. I'm talking about you, PZ. And in BJ Kramer and American Atheist's suite tonight, we have Running Elk, Jarrett Lennon Kaufman, and from the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science, Sean Faircloth. You know these sexist men from an inappropriate groping incident near an elevator near you.
But we were groping each other.
Ah, well.
Yeah, I was fine.
It's not sexism if you're groping another guy.
That's right.
They're
it's
making
sexism.
Us gay. That's what they're fucking doing.
Gay
hey,
agenda.
Listen. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And thank you, Heather, for being here. And thank you, audience, for showing up for our
taping. Yeah. We appreciate it.
Wait a minute. I have to be here.
We like being watched.
Yeah. It's funny. I want to call it live from TAM. Of course, we're all live, you idiot. But we're recording live at TAM, and you're listening to this days later.
In the future.
In the future. Well, in they're listening to in their current, our future.
Yes.
It's magic.
Yeah.
It's very confusing. So
I want to know how the show went tonight.
It was really, really good.
Oh, fantastic.
It was Heather fucking spanked it, man.
It, yeah.
Yeah, I was spanked.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't miss a goddamn note.
Nope.
And it was really cool when you flashed the whole audience.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm just saying. Yeah. Winkety wink. People are listening. They're like, what are they doing? They're making this note. See, what's happening is it's 10 a.m. and the show hasn't stood. Fuck you. So... We're going to talk about religious takeover of government, because Sean Faircloth knows a lot about this, and it bothers the shit out of me. If you're a listener to the show, you know that oftentimes I'll say things like cunt, and this is one of the reasons.
No.
This is what drives me to use a phrase like that. And for me, cunt is not something that women possess. It's just any asshole that's a dick. And,
wow.
If you're taking over Next government with your goddamn religious infiltration bullshit, you're a cunt.
Wow, you're writing the introduction for the paperback version of my book. So well done.
Thank you, Sean. I'm trying to help. So you know a lot about this, and it bothers you too, doesn't it?
It's been the last 30, 40 years. They've done a good job. I say whatever you want to call them, the vagina people. That
yes.
doesn't make any sense
no.
when
no,
you say
no,
it that
no.
way.
Don't offend the vagina.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's right.
But over the last 30, 40
they do
years,
stink. I'm
they've
sorry,
gotten really organized. Religious rights done a good job, and we haven't done as good a job of advocating for separation of church and state, and we need to get out there and start swinging.
Yeah.
Not swinging like Jared and I do in the elevator.
We can do that, too.
We can do
yeah.
that. Indeed, we do. The What amazes me is how effective they've been. For example, Prop 8 in Los Angeles, or in California, rather. They've really been effective. It's costing them dearly, though. I mean, millions, I think, were spent. Is that right?
And very well organized, and coming in from out of state. I give a speech on YouTube, Why Romney's Religion Matters, and a lot of times they'll have stuff that talks about, you know, the magic underwear and so forth, and that's interesting. I get that. But much more interesting to me is the financial efforts of the Mormon Church, the amount of money that they control, and how, unlike, say, 30, 40 years ago, they work. Forget about this. You hear this talk, oh, the fundamentalists don't like the Mormons. That's all for show. Uh-huh. The real deal is cash. And the money comes from the right wing end of the Catholic religion, which is now almost all that's left of the Catholic religion.
Right.
Mormonism and fundamentalist Protestants, that troika working together. And that's really what we should be watching out for, because it's an extremely effective troika.
Well, now, I the first thing I think is, I got to go look up the word troika, but secondly...
Also, I want to just mention that everybody in Northern California knows now the truth about you. You just said the Prop 8 in Los Angeles. That sounds just very Los Angeles-centric.
It does, yeah. No question that I live in a bubble. No question at all. Welcome to it. Here's what I like about what happened with Prop 8. I like anything that causes zealots to waste their money passing a law that will, from a constitutional standpoint, not stand the test and be knocked down. I like that. And I also like knowing where the bigots and assholes are. And it really, living in L.A., for example, where this was a very, very major issue a while back, I really got to know who thought that way. My girlfriend at the time was working for a really, really nice lady, a lawyer, who's African-American, and she was voting against homosexuals in that sense. That's how I put it. She was for Prop 8. She wanted to see homosexuals not have the right to marry. And big discussions came up between her and my girlfriend. And according to Tabitha, she changed her mind and she changed her vote after talking to Lainey a lot. So that went really well. It caused a lot of people to have to step out of their hate closet and be counted or seen.
Right.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Mm-hmm. And I like that. And that's what I like about the internet. That's what I like about the new social world that we're building is there's a weird – the internet has a false sense of anonymity, and people step right up and start saying absolutely awful, bullshit, fucking horrible things that they would never say in a coffee shop across from another human being. I like that, man. Society is working in that sense. Step on out. Throw off your fucking hood and let's talk to you.
But what I'd want to also have us expose is that while that issue is incredibly important, as is women's reproductive rights, incredibly important, what I want to tie all together – You're against it. Okay. But sorry to disagree on that point.
No. I think they have the right to reproduce.
But that...
not with my sperm.
In my book, I talk about 8 more areas where there's religious motivation and bias in law. And one thing that I worry about is that because I think we are going to succeed as far as equality for gay people, it's a generational thing and it will happen.
Right.
But what I want to point out is that religious motivation that harms people in a whole range of areas, land use planning, child protection, and that we expose it for what it is.
Yeah.
And one area where sometimes there's disagreement about strategy is, for example, I think a lot of times people who are skeptic, atheist, they talk about there's the cross on the hill in San Diego, for example, that's on public land. I'm against that. If I were a judge, I'd strike it down. Mm-hmm. But to me, that doesn't get to my neighbor as much as saying, oh, yeah, look at these child protection laws that make a separate standard where children can be medically neglected and abused based upon religion. And they have to say, oh, really, there is a problem. And guess where the problem comes from? Funny. It comes from religion. What is the primary motivating force, the financial force against gay equality? It's religion.
Yeah.
Let's say it for what it is. And a lot of times, even HRC, Human Rights Campaign, the leading gay rights organization, they sort of avoid exposing that truth, but that is the truth, and we need to be there. And that's what I write about in my book, is exposing that reality.
Right.
There's no reason why gay shouldn't get married. The only reason is a religious reason. There's no other reason.
Well, the head of the HRC one time, and who I admire the organization tremendously, it's fantastic, but he said something, and I'm paraphrasing, so when he beats me up, I'll find out later that I said it incorrectly. But at one point he said something like, well, at HRC, 40% of our members participate in some religion. I'm thinking, using my math, you know, that means perhaps 60% don't, right? Yeah. And yet somehow that they're wanting to couch it in this other fashion and say, you know, we're the white picket fence. And I get that. I understand the political strategy of it. But for me, I think what we're advocating for is wholesome and kind and caring and honest and all those good things. And I don't want it to be somehow stigmatized that because I'm not religious, I'm outside the white picket fence. I'm in the white picket fence, damn it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And we own that white picket fence, and not being religious is a positive step toward compassion and caring, not something that's a fringe.
And yeah. That's where the efforts to separate morality from religion are so vital, because religion seems to believe it owns morality. It seems to believe it's the source of it. And that it's the arbiter of it in every society. I mean, there's still these claims you'll hear from a lot of religious people that any society not based on religion would crumble and fall, completely ignoring the fact that there are many societies throughout the world that have no primary religious basis, are incredibly secular compared to us, and are doing better than us in basically every statistic you can find on the map.
Yeah, Jared, but what about the Nazis? them motherfuckers was atheists.
The Catholics, you mean?
Yeah, that's right. Catholic atheist motherfuckers.
That's right.
Gott mit uns my ass.
Yeah, yeah, those vegetarian Catholic Nazis. Yeah.
Circumcision is another thing that is just really
hot. I mean, what?
Right. What? You find that hot?
Well, it's only religious based. I mean, there's no other exactly. reason to cut off the tip of a baby's penis.
You know, circumcision.
Female circumcision, genital mutilation.
Yeah. Ooh,
you make
yeah, right, yeah. right. Bite it
you make the hot joke. I mean, the reality of it is, as an adult, body modification is entirely your choice. Yeah. So if you want to cut off a part of your genitals as an adult by choice, all more power to you. I mean, people get piercings. People get
Maybe
get
less
tattoos.
Power to you, depending yes. on but how still, you
just
do that.
The other night, I was having sex with Heather, and I was thinking, man, you know, if I had a big old bar going through my cock, this would be amazing.
Okay, wait a second.
She might actually come.
You know that my ex-boyfriend had that.
Yeah, I know.
And sent me basically to the gynecologist.
Ampling? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a point here, which is that it is now illegal in Germany for.
Thank you, yes.
It's illegal, right. Thank you very much, Laura.
That, which is fantastic.
Laura from Fact versus yeah. Religion pointed out that it's illegal now
really?
In Germany
mm-hmm.
to
what?
Cut the head of a tiny boy's cock off.
They pulled that off.
Why is that a sentence that has to fucking be said?
Which you know,
I saw something on Twitter that said it was like just a news announcement that ban was, you know, worst thing that happened to the Jews since the Holocaust.
Yeah, well, there was
the worst thing that happened to the Jews since the Holocaust is that German Jews are going to have they're going to have to keep their cock.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God. How awful.
There was the joke online. Not sure if you know it was in a response to it. You know, not sure if. A boon to human rights, or they're just trying to screw over the Jews again.
That's so but funny.
The head of a baby's cock is not screwing.
No, not at all. Right.
This is the same thing.
That's
I just
this is the logic process.
You have to believe there's a God that did everything, which is ignorant beyond measure, in order to justify cutting off an infant's cock, or trying to stop somebody from butt fucking.
Yep. Yep.
You know, two men butt fucking is a sanctity to my straight butt fucking. No, not a sanctity. I fucked up the joke, but you know what I'm getting at.
We got it.
Fuck, I suck it. I can't do comedy at 10:30 in the morning. Fuck all of you.
Now.
All right.
So when you say that about the moral justifications, all the things in American law where there's a religious bias, what happens is people get hurt, whether it's land use planning, where they actually say we can ignore environmental laws because we're a religious group, which a lot of people don't know about. That's true under federal law. A lot of religious groups can sue and be exempted from environmental and land use planning. So the consequence is somebody gets hurt. So in each case, what I always try to point out is the morality is actually on our side,
sure.
is on the secular side of the issue. But that's why I think we're not specific enough a lot of the time, because I feel like we end up in the debate about do you believe in God and whether or not that's morality.
Right.
But as that abstraction, it's harder to be convincing, I think, sometimes in saying, are you for the child being abused and the law that authorizes it or
right.
not?
Right, right.
If you're for that law, then you're doing something immoral.
Mm-hmm.
If you're against
mm-hmm.
the law, join us and oppose religion. Either way, we win the debate.
Right.
So, Running Elk, what's your penis like?
Good God, that's weird. I was literally about to say that.
Fantastic.
I was going to say, are you circumcised or not?
You see that pretty regularly, so
Running
I mean,
Elk.
You know.
Tell us about your cock, Running Elk.
Well, it's not very big. Mm-hmm. And
I beg to differ. Can it differ? Can it differ?
Yeah, I can differ. Yeah.
Do you have a data
circumcised?
Set?
Yeah, it's like evidence.
Look at his pants.
Tell us about your sock, Running Elk.
My sock is an ankle sock today. I, brought some sub hose, but not, didn't put it on.
Does anybody here, by the way, I know that I just shouted awfully about circumcision. Is there anybody among us? I know Jarrett doesn't agree with it, but do you have any problem with circumcision? Some people, some reasonable people don't have a problem with circumcision. What's your position on it?
I don't have kids, so I haven't had to come up with that decision. Right. And but my father wasn't circumcised, and he went into a lecture one time about how he thought the kids should be circumcised.
You hear that sometimes.
Because he didn't. He wished he would have been circumcised.
He wished,
well, you hear a cancer argument. I've heard scientific. So to me, it's just whatever the science says.
You know, I got in an argument with my daughter about it, and I'll bring that up after this. But that's an interesting point. Why didn't someone say to your dad, go get circumcised, fag? I mean, you can.
It didn't cross my mind.
At the time?
Yeah,
to call your dad a fag?
Well,
no.
I hear that argument a lot from people. You know, well, one of the common ones that I hear from men is, oh, I'm so glad my parents circumcised me so I didn't have to do it as an adult because, you know, they're terrified to have it done.
Right.
Which to me is kind of that sign of if you're terrified to have someone cut off part of your cock.
You shouldn't
Maybe
be cutting off part of your
idea.
Cock. Yeah, that's no shit. Here's the story. My daughter is dating a guy who, in his teens, I don't know his age when it happened. He might have been younger. Had to, for health reasons, for medical reasons, get circumcised. He kept getting infected, and there was some problem with his...
with his junk?
Yeah,
foreskin?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. So... they had to do it, and on occasion that happens. Now I don't know what percentage it happens, but I can tell you that just logically, it's not high. It's not a high percentage of people who are, as a kid or as a teenager or as an adult or a young man, having to go to the doctor and then get that circumcision thing done. But his and her argument to me one day, and she got really mad at me over this discussion, which kind of saddened me. But her argument was, we should do it. In case you would have to do it later, because what he went through to get this done was awful. My response to that, which really upset her, was by that argument, then everybody should get mastectomies as soon as they can.
I use the same argument.
Is that the argument?
This is one I hear a lot.
There's a higher rate of cancer, cancer, than there is the medical need to circumcise men.
There are a lot of arguments, medical arguments, of things that can happen that are slightly less likely to happen if you're circumcised. UTI rates are supposedly a little bit lower in circumcised men.
If I'd known that, I'd have had it done. I'm kidding. I have a cut cock.
Phimosis is an occasional problem as a child. It's the tightening of the foreskin, which...
happens to me about every 10 minutes. What are you saying?
And realistically, doctors used to solve that through circumcision, but the reality of it is just steroidal cream will resolve the problem the vast majority of the time.
Yeah.
Adult problems, one of the most common ones I heard for years was, well, penile cancer is a higher risk in uncircumcised people. Now, that is technically true. However, penile cancer, based on everything I had read, is primarily something that afflicts men in their 70s. And
you're done with it by then.
It's hard.
I can pee in a bag from there on.
At that time,
the
rates of penile cancer and its death rate, because you know it was a relatively treatable cancer, versus the death rate of infants from circumcision was similar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So now again, this is I want to couch.
There
this
you go, using the goddamn data. Why you got to go to the data?
This information I collected years ago. So it's entirely possible the circumcision practices have improved to a level where it's below it now, etc. So I don't want to give misimpressions based on old data. But the point is, most of this information is based on things that are decisions that can be made as an adult later on, informed decisions by the person who actually owns the penis.
Well, you know, BJ just informed me that in the news today on Reuters. That Chancellor Angela Merkel's spokesman promised Germany's Jewish and Muslim communities on Friday that they would be free to carry out circumcision on young boys despite the court ban.
I didn't know that was a Muslim deal.
Has provoked too, concerns about religious freedom. Yeah, they can. Yeah. The Muslims, I believe, can decide when they want to do it, just whenever they want to do it. Yeah,
when did it start happening? Across, I mean, I was circumcised. I'm Protestant. I was raised Protestant. Mm.
Well, it was. I mean, of course, classically, it was a Jewish thing predominantly.
Right.
Granted, the New Testament has some confusion because a lot of Christians will do it also for religious reasons because, you know, at least they feel it wasn't overridden. But in reality, there is, and I forget the exact quote, but there was something that specifically stated that baptism essentially replaced that or could. But
that makes sense.
In the U.S., realistically, it was heavily an anti-masturbation process, method. Kellogg himself was heavily involved in it. You know, cornflakes were actually invented as a method of reducing masturbation. Yeah, the belief was that
it always worked for me.
Yes,
it was. The belief was that a hot spicy
unless
food,
it was the
flavor
frosted
foods,
flakes,
things like that would inflame
the Special
soul
K
and,
turns
yes.
me on.
Yeah,
right. And so but bland foods.
Something about
were a
that tiger.
To, bland foods there were a way to reduce sex drive. And so circumcision was one of the many tools they had in those days to try to reduce masturbation, frequency, desire, et cetera. Wow.
So this was around the turn of the century, the last century?
Yeah, roughly. That was certainly where the drive was. But a lot of this, well, obviously all of this was religiously motivated in some way or another because who the hell else would care whether you were masturbating?
Well, I hope somebody cares.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Mom, I call him up and say, do you care?
From what I understand, God does.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so... That's important.
That's
that
the point.
Bastard.
Yeah.
No,
I talked to him. He said he didn't care. Oh, all right, cool. Can you spread the tweet it, please? People need to know.
Let everyone else know.
Make sure you write at the end of the tweet, please retweet. That always works.
More on the penis after this. You're listening to Ardent Atheist on Dissident Radio and available on the iTunes Store.
We've had a lot of people ask us about the comedy sketch clips that we play from the vile comedy album Chaos Radio. So we are making it available to you. You can buy your favorite tracks from the 23-track record individually for $1, or you can buy the entire recording for $18. Just go to Gumroad.com/Emery. That's G-U-M as in Mary, ROAD.com/Emery, and get a piece of comedy that should never have been made, let alone sold to living human beings.
And now back to Ardent Atheist, nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with Running Elk. That's
hello.
Rob, Jarrett Lennon Kaufman and Sean Faircloth. So I don't know if our parents realize it, Running Elk, but they've made it so that you and I can't put our foreskin together and do that thing with them. What's that
docking?
Called? Docking, yeah.
You taught me that.
I what? Did. Yes. I forgot it.
Yes. I'm still ignorant.
Not
I hadn't heard
not
that one.
Yes.
Heard
where was I? Where was I when this happened?
Let's be very clear that I did not technically teach Jarrett docking.
Yes, the terminology.
Thank you for fucking.
Yeah. I thought that involved spaceships. Is that like the Soyuz and the space lab?
Very phallic symbol, anyway.
Well, and I don't know if you know what space docking is.
It's a
space docking
involves no gravity. I take it.
Do you know what space docking is?
No, I don't.
Space docking. I learned that cutting the aristocrat.
Aristocrats. Is that the other show? I didn't see the aristocrats. It is early, isn't it?
who was it? I can't remember who it was that said it in the movie. But space docking is taking a shit in a woman's vagina.
What?
What a waste of a good vagina.
Or a good shit, right.
Yeah.
Get another microphone up here.
So what's next?
I think what Jared's saying is, where the hell do we go from here? So,
if we down in the elevator.
If we can get back to the imagery of you and me space docking. Docking. Because you don't have a
neither
vagina.
Neither of us is equipped for that. No. Yeah. We're not equipped for either one.
Yeah.
And so.
And I'm not shitting in your ass. I want to apologize to Sean Faircloth.
I apologize to everyone.
If he could see if he
another chapter in my book. Space docking.
Spelled D-A-W-K-I-N.
Luckily, it's not an...
Space Dawkins.
I'm glad my book's not illustrated, though.
Yes, me too. Yeah. Me fucking too.
Oh, Running Elk is so above what we're doing right now.
No, I'm trying to wake up.
It's Friday the 13th, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Today, not while you're listening to this. Don't be confused. I really worry. We have smart listeners. Why do I do
maybe
that?
Maybe at some point in the future it will be Friday the 13th again.
Yeah.
And they could listen
someone
to
may
it
listen
at that
to
point.
It then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it. Download this episode. And on the next Friday the 13th, play it Again. So what we're about to talk about will seem current.
Of course, you have to wait a half an hour to actually get back.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you're in Australia, you're fucked. I don't know how that works. It's always another day down there.
Is it the day ahead or the behind?
Yeah, they're always ahead. I call a friend of mine who lives there, and I go, hey, what's the weather like tomorrow?
And he hangs up on you.
No, he actually fucking answers me. Right. I have dumb relationships with people.
I'm shocked.
Hey-o.
Hey, you and me, we're talking about putting cocks together.
That's right.
So, Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. I'm always amazed by the 13 fear. You know, there are elevators in Los Angeles that don't have a goddamn number 13.
Our elevator, our hotel is split in half. It goes to floor 12.
Where we are now.
12.
Oh. Yes. And then it starts again at 14.
What, here? The South Point or the Rio?
Yeah. South Point. Yeah. Yeah.
South Point.
Well, we are in Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's Vegas. They know luck.
That's right. Yeah.
So they're experts.
So, you know, if they want to do it right, if they want to treat this properly, they should build an empty 13th floor and just not allow anyone to go there. Because otherwise, the 14th floor is the 13th floor.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. People are just fooling themselves.
That's exactly right. What's really... That's a... I wish I had billions. That is the best casino I could think of.
Right?
Right there. That would be a fucking... That would be amazing.
That's a great... Or a casino just called 13. All the floors are 13.
Well, but you...
Like a Twilight Zone casino.
Yeah.
13A, 13B, 13C.
That's right.
No, you just have to guess which floor you're going to.
And then the room numbers would be 13A followed by Roman numerals for the actual room numbers.
Well, on the 13th...
Make it as complicated as possible.
On the actual 13th floor, I suggest we have a private area for like really cool people like me.
Only reasonable people would go into a casino like this.
That's right.
Then you wouldn't have to sit next to some retarded moron while you're
wasting
your money.
Which means they'd have no business at all.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Anybody who understands odds is not going to be in a place like that.
Yes.
So, the 13th. If I've said it once, I've said it 12 times. I hate triskaidekaphobia.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
The fear of the number 13.
But you're okay if people are afraid of the number 11.
Yeah, that's cool.
Sure, no
that's
problem.
Cool. That's, that's rational.
Yes.
Is it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yes.
You can't trust those fuckers standing right next to each other.
It looks like two gay guys.
Oh, it's a challenge to the sanctity of my 13. God damn.
I think you got it right that time.
I did do the joke right that time.
Yeah, just edit that in.
I don't edit, sadly. Sadly for the listener and for my career.
All right, listeners, just you rewind to the beginning after you hear this and then skip that part.
God, okay, we don't
rewind
show.
Anymore. It's all digital.
There's no rewinding. I guess you can go back.
Yeah.
God damn.
What is the word?
Back.
What did you skip back?
Where did the 13th, since we're on it, where I don't know where it came from, the 13th.
There
issue.
Are so many rumors about that. I don't think it's
I know BJ is typing furiously right behind me right now to figure out where it started.
Yeah.
There's various
our
claims.
Research department.
There's various claims about Friday the 13th.
Now BJ is
like
closing the kiddie porn page he had up. To Judas? So one of the rumors, it refers to Judas.
Shocking that there's rumors
that
about
band,
it
Judas
basis.
Priest? No. No. Oh, something else.
Oh, right.
No.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So it's biblical in nature.
Well, that's only one.
Just like the 12 days of Christmas
you've got your bacon,
about, you know, yeah. It's
speaking of donuts, you've got your, speaking of donuts, and we're all talking about donuts, aren't we? Because tonight
that's
is,
what
we
were talking about.
Or
right?
Last Friday, which was tonight, is
hot dogs and donuts.
The bacon and donut party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's the Baker's Dozen.
Dozen is 13.
Which is 13.
Yeah.
Which seems like a win.
Just throwing that out there.
Well, that's someone trying to change the whole fear of.
Now you can use Wikipedia and you could look at all the things that happen, right? On the
and that's
say,
the thing.
Okay, all these good things happen, then all these bad things.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, when
I
you
think
look
I started a relationship Friday the
13th
and I said it was good luck until it ended. Now it's, I guess it's bad luck.
Well,
now.
And that's funny.
Well, there you go. That's
confirmation
bias. That's all that is. That's a good example of
that. It's all perspective. And this is something, there's a project that my friend Wendy and I are involved in that we co-created called The Odds Must Be Crazy.
Yes,
it's a blog, and we have a mini podcast within Skepticality that addresses this. And it's all about collecting stories of crazy coincidences or things that line up in ridiculous ways that to the average person seem like they're a sign of something more in the world. And this is all stuff that's based. It's either the basis for superstition or it's based in superstition.
Right.
But that's exactly the point. There is a lot of the stories we get when you read them. They're really surprising things that people will line up, whether it's meeting up with someone in a strange place, you know, that they haven't seen in 20 years, and they both happen to be in Japan at that moment, or something along those lines. And it sounds ridiculous and crazy and like it means something and like it's meant to mean something. But when you start breaking it down, you realize all the other things that could have happened instead, or the other people you could have run into somewhere else at some time or not run into, or the people who happened to also be in that city that you knew who you never saw. The odds are drastically raised by the large number of events that occur. It's the law of large numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all perspective and confirmation bias. And just like you're saying, you can count that day as lucky because a relationship started that day. But 3 years later, when the relationship ends miserably, suddenly that was the unluckiest day in your life. It's all perspective.
You're so goddamn reasonable, Jared. Why, don't you have any wonder? Don't you have any joy in your life? I mean, you just analyze everything. What the hell do you do?
Why is that dumb guy have a southern accent?
Every dumb guy has a southerner. Fuck you.
Oh, boy.
Goddamn.
Oh,
I don't know
the
why.
Emails.
There's people raising their hands.
Yeah.
Oh.
There we go.
He's from Texas.
He's this raising his hand and going, right, it's true. It's
is this podcast aired in the South?
Yeah.
we have three listeners there.
You say that, and that is actually a focus for us, is holding on to the awe and wonder. Because we do find these things awesome and wonderful.
Well,
They're exciting.
When I moved to New York, which is back in the 80s or so, and I would run into people in New York. And at first it was like, wow, that's crazy. What are you doing in New York? And it started to happen to me, and I got used to it.
Yes.
And I thought, well, this, you know, it's just the way it is. It's just a big city. And I walked around all the time. And one day I was walking down to Union Station, 14th Street, and there was a guy that I knew from Minneapolis. That's where I moved from. And he had moved out to New York, named Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And he was standing there.
Do we know him?
Steve Pincus. I haven't seen him since then.
Okay.
But
Steven Pinker. Different one.
Different,
Pincus.
Yes. Yes.
So I walked down the subway, and there he's standing there. And I said, there you are. Just to fuck with him.
Right. That's
and he turned
that
around
right there
and he went,
running up.
Oh my God! What are you doing here? And it was this had happened to me so much, and I just acted like, oh, I planned it. You know, I'm here. And he just poor bastard, and it was so great. Yeah.
And
I mind melded you here.
That was interesting. The perspective between the two of you, because you had put yourself in a position where you recognized I'm in a big city full of people. Everyone's walking around. I'm going to run into people I know frequently. You started to realize that that's just an accepted part of your life there.
Yeah.
And for him, it sounds like it was a giant shock. He didn't have that same perspective you did. And so for him, he could go home and tell someone the story like this was the biggest deal in the world, while you would go home and maybe not even bother to mention it.
Has he ever brought it up again?
But you said
you haven't talked to him.
No, I haven't talked to him in a while. Yeah. I got to look him up.
What you have to do is figure out where he is.
Yeah,
do the
and
same
then show up.
Thing.
Hey, there you are.
Damn it. You know,
that
you made it
good.
Tougher this time.
That would be good.
Yeah, that'd be a good gag.
But
I'm a bitch.
You would hear those stories about people like, oh, I'm like this guy who was a director that I worked with one time. He was going to meet somebody to have a meeting, and he ended up being on the same plane with them.
Yeah.
So then they met, and then they sat down. But that's just coincidence.
We have this stuff all over the map. I had one years back where I had to go to a sales conference for a job I used to have, and they would pair everybody up. So I'd get a roommate, you know, nobody I'd ever met from some other part of the country. And so we were sitting in our hotel room just chatting as we headed into bedtime, and had the television on. Because you're in a hotel room for a stranger, you just leave the television on as background. It's kind of a comfort thing. And so I started talking about my acting background and the various jobs I had done. And an episode of Cheers came up on the screen. And I had done a few episodes of Cheers when I was a kid, and I glance at the screen and I notice it seems familiar to me. But granted, I watch Cheers a lot, so they all seem familiar to me. So I didn't really think about that.
Yeah, I attribute deja vu to going to McDonald's a lot.
Yes.
Big Mac? Fuck, I remember this.
Anyway, the title sequence ends, and I walk on the screen. It was my debut episode of Cheers.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
I have to watch this now.
Yeah.
I never knew you were on Cheers. It. Freaks and Geeks, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
Freaks
I did that,
geeks.
Too. Yeah. I did three episodes of that as well. Yeah. But, yeah. So I just started. I've just been talking about
and
my acting
And where are they
career.
Now? Another show he's been on.
Where are they?
What?
Sadly, no, not yet.
Not yet. Damn it.
So that happened to me. Okay, today. Yeah. This morning. Mm-hmm. Whatever day we are in.
Yes.
So I go down to the coffee shop. I go down to the coffee shop, and I haven't done this podcast before.
Right.
And I'm
you know, I was thinking, oh, should I do some research? And I, no, I'm not going to
fuck research. We do cocktails.
So I go down to get, you know, have my oatmeal. That's what I had today. And I see, and I get my table for one, and I see BJ waiting to get a table.
Also eating oatmeal.
No, he's waiting to get into the coffee shop. So I go over to him, and I say, hey, are you by yourself? Come over and sit down. So we're, and we just met a couple nights ago. So we're eating. So, and then I look at my watch and I think, oh, I got to get up there for this podcast. So I said, I got to go do this podcast for Emery. He goes, it's in my room. And I went, oh. And of course it was like, oh, that's right. Because we're right. A TAM. And I didn't go, oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, just.
Are you kidding me? That's amazing.
What
Right.
Fuck me!
Well, you know,
everybody sees BJ everywhere.
Of course, you know, you had a rational reaction. I shit my pants.
That seems appropriate too. Just
how weird is that?
And I'm
I
glad.
Just shit my pants.
And I'm so glad.
Is that some kind of docking?
I'm so glad. Yeah. And yeah. Well we were docking at that moment. And that was even weirder. I'm so glad I didn't piss him off because he would have said, fuck you. You're not coming
to my room.
I had friends that had superstitions that I just didn't understand. I had a friend. I'm sure you probably all know somebody who does something similar to this. Driving in the car and a yellow light comes and they scratch the top of their roof or they
touch
something, you know, in their car to get them through the, kiss their hand and press the top of the car, the roof of the car, to get through the yellow light safely. Mm. And I would just look at these people and go, huh? Yeah. So I developed
that's not 10 and 2. I mean, with the hands on the...
Yeah. Although they've adjusted that, actually. Yeah. There's new numbers.
10 and
touch
2
your brake
is
pedal.
Not safe. You're fatiguing your muscles,
I forget
you?
What it specifically is. Well, there's partially that. It's actually more dangerous for your arms, the way that positioning in a crash. Right. I forget the exact numbers. If I'm not mistaken, the numbers are not symmetrical anymore either, the positioning. No, I think
four
it's,
and 11.
It's roughly, trying to figure three out. And...
Half past six.
I'd have to look it up, but they've officially.
I don't know.
Adjusted.
All my fucking clocks are digital.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, in honor of that, I had my own little 3 and 10.
Oh, is that it?
Three and ten.
Okay.
Well, only drive between the hours of 3 and 10, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we learned here.
In honor of that, I have my own little thing. This is after I became an atheist when I was driving in Philadelphia because there's. It's hard to get parking in Philadelphia on the street, especially down in the city. And so I would say, Hail Mary, full of grace, help me find a parking place. Mm. And I would, you know, uncanny. It would be uncanny. Sure. I'd find parking after I'd say that, and I just laugh.
After you cruise for an hour.
Well, see, and you,
and we could do that now, probably. We could say that and find parking.
Yeah, well, here
in
Vegas.
You attributed that to it. You laughed about it.
Yeah,
as
I
you
laughed.
Said.
Right.
But so many people will absolutely make that connection. They will take that step. They'll find the space. Of course, they'll forget all the times they didn't, or they won't pay attention to the fact that it took them 10 minutes to find a space, and another time it took them 30 seconds.
Yeah.
None of that matters. They eventually find a place to park. Bingo, my ritual worked.
I always say... hail luck, full of shit. Help me find a place to put it.
No, sweetie.
I have a lot of anal sex. That's all I'm
saying. Let's talk about superstitions in acting.
No.
Oh my God.
The old adage in acting is don't talk about the audition.
Yes.
Don't talk. You got to call back for something.
I grew up with that, absolutely.
Don't talk about it.
Yeah. Break a leg. Yeah.
And I had an audition. Well, I had an audition years ago for the show, the pilot. And I knew I had a great audition, and I knew I was going to get the job. Mm-hmm. And I said, fuck that shit. I called up my friend, and I said, I just auditioned for this thing, and I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
What? He was like, what are you telling me that for?
Yeah.
Are you stupid?
And I did get it. And then I've had many callbacks where I'm sure I'm going to get it, and I still say, I'm going to get it, and then I don't get it.
Well, you know, I've done that, but it's because I'm more nervous about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Right,
I don't
want
to talk about it. And I would say, I don't want to jinx myself.
Well, we have three actors at the table right now. Heather's acted before. Yeah. Running Elk and Jarrett.
But for me, it's not wanting to be disappointed by not
getting it. Wait a minute.
Getting your hopes up.
Let's explain just why this works for most people. How many auditions do you go to ratio to get? How many auditions are you... Right?
Yeah, there's a. I have heard, and it's higher for me right now, but it's like 100 to 1.
So you'll go to 100 auditions before you land one.
Right.
Yeah.
Fine. So, of course, that.
So it's like dating for me.
Yeah.
Well.
Now,
yeah, you can be an actor.
Now, granted, granted, in a situation like this,
you take rejection.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. In a situation like this, you're not going to talk about the 100 auditions. If you're going to talk about anything, it's going to be that 10 out of the 100 that you felt really good about or that you really wanted. It's going to be a much smaller selection that you're going to find interesting. It does have practical implications, like Heather was basically just saying. To a degree, there's a lot of stuff I wouldn't talk about afterwards just because I didn't want to think about it anymore. Especially knowing the 100 out of 1, I would just assume logistically, odds are I don't have the job. Why put it in my head? Why take up brain space? Why be excited about it, etc.? So I didn't go from a superstitious perspective, although many, many people did. But there certainly was that. But absolutely, if you can easily break down those lists where it's just like that thing that you know absolutely you've got. And I had so many of those where in the last minute they found somebody else who just happened to have a totally different take. And I knew for a fact, I mean, I had producers telling me, you know, because I was friends with a lot of casting directors and producers, I'd have people say, don't worry, you've got this one. And then they found someone ridiculously off the wall. And then there were the jobs I for a fact knew. That's, you know, I would go in, I'd read it, I'd walk out and laugh, and that's bullshit. That's never, I'm never going to hear anything back. 3 days later, I get a call, you're booked. For what?
As a producer and a director, I do have similar feelings. Like if I start a project, there's a lot that has to happen before that project ends up either on TV or in a film, or rather in a theater or on DVD. A lot of things have to go all the way through. So it's not that I'm superstitious about mentioning them. It's that I don't want to have to go back and go, yeah, that fucking thing I was working on fell apart.
Yeah.
Because so many projects will fall apart right before they're almost done.
Sure. No, I had things I was cast in that just plain literally never happened at all.
Yeah.
I was a shoo-in for it. It was guaranteed. It was definitely, I was definitely set. Right. And then the project just completely collapsed.
Right.
So that's a whole other reason to just not get your hopes up.
Yeah.
And I think that's again a basis for a lot of people too. That's when it comes to the not talking or not counting your chickens before they hatch thing, etc. There's a lot of superstitions based around I don't want to jinx it.
Yeah.
And really what it is I don't want to get my hopes up.
Yeah.
But they've adjusted to an actual supernatural thing where suddenly they believe it's the talking about it action that causes it to fail versus it failing because it failed.
Human nature in general. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't understand superstition, but I used to do it. Earlier, Heather was talking about I used to drive around in a car, and how crazy is this? This is so fucking Christian thinking. I was a Christian at the time, and we all hate red lights. Well, one time I was watching a preacher, and he's like, in his sermon, he goes, you really want to mess with the devil? I'll tell you what you do. You can mess with the devil by putting a Bible next to you in the car. And when you come to a red light, you pick up that Bible and that devil will change that light to green.
Eventually.
Wow. The devils are in control of, yes.
Nice. As soon as you open the Bible.
I'm not kidding. And I had a Bible in my car.
Yeah.
And I was convincing myself that the devil was changing the light to green. What an awful fucking existence.
Because
we
all know that traffic control is the devil.
How amazing. I believe that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I mean,
Joe
I was
Osteen,
a Christian,
so where he would preach and talk about actually praying for good seating at a restaurant, which I said, isn't that so? Those are some awesome values.
Right.
You know,
right.
Those poor kids in Africa.
God's priorities.
It's like Tammy Faye Baker.
I need a good seat at Olive Garden.
At Spago.
Yeah. The only reason that works to a Christian.
Olive Garden with these people.
The only reason that works is because as a Christian, you're taught to understand that there are no limits to God. And so if there are no limits to God, you asking him to make sure that as you trim this nail, you don't actually nick your finger is not really a waste of someone's time who transcends time. And that's how you get away.
And you lived in the house. You were an adult.
I was going to be a preacher.
Oh. Yeah. Which denomination?
Evangelistic. I was. I went to Full Faith Church of Love in Kansas City. They sent me off to Circle C Ranch.
I want to do it so I can get that parsonage exemption in the tax code. Get myself a sweet crib.
Yeah,
you know?
No. I got out of that form of entertainment and into stand up comedy. So it was a lateral move.
yeah. No.
Sadly, I get a lot less pussy where I am now. But
I talked to a woman who was in the evangelical world. She was the wife of a minister, and she said that people are always talking about the Catholic Church and the priests and so forth. She said, forget about it. Equally rampant is the ministers in the evangelical world sexually, being predators with young gals and, you know, people who are not age appropriate and all this, you know.
When I was 15 at a youth conference, I first heard the joke, old enough to bleed, old enough to breed. from a youth minister.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's
so sexy. Youth ministers.
Well, you know, that's a biblical value right there.
There's a website that has the lists of priests and pastors in trouble. So, you know, every time, which is every day, a pastor gets arrested or accused of doing something, it goes on the list and you can go. Right. It's like a database. Yeah. I'm looking it up right now, but the computer is working very slow.
Let's go to a break.
Can
now.
Make a list
but
like
it wouldn't necessarily be
a
legal, you know, it wouldn't be something you'd go into court for. But this woman was saying that these guys would set up orgies. They'd sit there and preach on Sunday, you know, against gay people, against this, against that, and then bring in, you know, a bunch of women, go strippers and have sex and just completely hypocritical.
Incredible. So what we're saying
yeah,
is...
So
what we're saying is religion isn't all bad. You're listening to Ardent Atheist on Dissident Radio and available on the iTunes Store. And now, a special announcement.
This is a big super shout out to all of the TAM-goers filling BJ's suite right now. Brian Fields, Don DiNatale, Lauren Facts versus Religion, MD Stephen Vargo, Katie Havani, Wendy Hughes, Emily Deedle, and Edward Ondrick. These are the people watching us right now. And we wouldn't have a great show without you. It's just me pandering to you. Thanks.
Now back to Ardent Atheist nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with Running Elk, Jared Lennon Kaufman, and Sean Faircloth. I'm so sorry you were pulled into this nightmare. But
enjoying it so far. Docking. I've learned a lot. Vocabulary words.
Space Dawkins.
Yeah. Space Dawkins.
Somebody please make that meme.
He says, don't tell him about sleeving. What's that?
Sleeving. Oh. Well, that's what docking is, I believe, right?
No.
Oh. No?
Educate us.
It's just the foreskin.
Yeah. Right. What's sleeving?
Sleeving is a penis inside of a penis.
Oh, Jesus God. Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
inside of a penis?
It's a durkakken.
Durkakken?
It's a durkakken. A penis inside a penis is a durkakken, and I know it's true because a man wearing a doctor's uniform just...
Yes, totally.
If a man wearing scrubs tells you that a man can put scrubs. A penis inside another penis, I think he knows what he's talking about. How do you explain that in the emergency room? We were both running really fast at each other. We were both very hard.
He had a micro penis.
Yeah, I'd rather have to. I don't want to ever have to explain that in an emergency room again. But
your health insurance.
Your health insurance dollars at work. I want to make sure that I want to make sure that we get to. Get back to the original point, and that is.
Oh, what was that?
No,
docking. Docking, right. Yeah.
What can the listener to this show do to actually help stop the horror that is religious takeover of government?
Two things, and I'm going to talk about this on Sunday, which I guess will be in the past later.
And let's be clear.
Yes.
So you are one of the speakers here at TAM 2012.
But two things I think that your listeners really could do to help us combat the religious right. One is we need organized statewide secular groups. And I emphasize statewide. Arizona has done this recently. When I was at Secular Coalition for America, I worked with them to get that kicked off. And it's really been energizing for the state. You know, Arizona, you don't need to be all that informed in issues to know how crazy things are in Arizona sometimes. But they actually went above my expectations for this concept, and now they went and raised enough money to hire a woman who lobbies, Sarah Blaine, there in Arizona. She's constantly communicating about what's happening in the state, both the state level and also about federal issues, federal elected officials there in Arizona. And it provides secular people a real focus to know what's going on. If we can have one of those in every single state of the union, it will really provide a counterbalance voice. When I was in politics myself, if five people called me up and said, darn it, Sean, you've got to do this. I'm a politician. Well, somebody told me this is important. I'm going to at least pay attention.
Right.
I mean, if people start contacting you. And when I was in politics 10 years in elective office, the religious right, I mean, they gave up on me because I was such a, you know, lefty, whatever. I was a waste of their time. But nonetheless, they were lobbying all the time. The religious right was there, even in Maine politics. Think what it must be like in Alabama or places like that.
Right.
My point is the presence matters. We don't have a presence, really. We're getting it. You know, Secular Coalition has that glimmer of a presence in Washington. We need it in every single state of the union. And you and your listeners can help say, hey, I'll help organize it. I know something about the web. I'll help with a statewide website, the richarddawkins.net. We get a million hits a month. We would happily help with hosting of this, you know, sub-websites from our site and really get a lot of visitors so we can facilitate that.
Yeah, spacedawkins.net is pretty fucking busy.
Yeah, I think that's the name we're shooting for. Thank you. Right. And what I'd say about that is that we can all work as a team on these issues, because one thing that the richarddawkins.net can provide is really big numbers. I've seen this since I've started working there, just the amount of people that visit, I guess just because of the Richard Dawkins name, come to that website, and we can help really build the population base, because it has to be grassroots. It's not so much the lobbying per se to me. It's the saying, I can email at some point, I hope we get there, you know, I can email 10,000 people in my state. When we can start to say that, then we have meaning. Because a lobbyist by themselves doesn't matter to a politician. What matters is the number of people that they speak for and the number of dollars. So that's key, and there's more, but I'll let
No, keep going.
Oh.
And I'm reminding you to stay close to that mic.
Oh, sorry. Then the other thing that I would like everybody to help with is we're going to work on a documentary expose about the injustices I write about in my book, and then we're going to contrast that with sort of the lifestyles of the rich and religious. I mentioned this parsonage exemption in the tax code, which is really a phenomenal thing. So picture your income. How much of your income is attributable to your housing, whether you rent or whether you own?
Oh, yeah.
All of that they exempt from their income. And in the past, it would be like, well, you've got the little humble cottage next to the church. No, these people are living some extravagant lifestyles in these megachurches, and it's expanded exponentially. In 1970, there were less than 100 megachurches. Megachurches are defined as 2,000 or more in an average Sunday. There are less than 100 in 1970. Now there's hundreds upon hundreds of these throughout the United States. Usually they have multiple pastors per megachurch, and they all get this parsonage exemption. So it's an economic driver for the system. And what I'm asking folks to do, and we've done this at richarddawkins.net, and I'm going to ask people about this in my speech, is to not just think about the Joyce Meyers, you know, the big-time ones, the multimillionaires, but the ones who are in a small town in Missouri that have a $200,000 and $300,000 home in the Midwest, pretty nice, where they are exempt from their taxes. Investigate the lifestyles of the rich and religious, and we'll really start to document that, and we'll make
a new reality show.
No shit.
Yeah. And to me, it's just an outrageous something. I hope even liberal religious people would say, you know, that's wrong. It's outrageous.
God wants you to build mega churches instead of feeding the hungry.
And their personal residence that we are effectively subsidizing, and a lot of times really extravagant homes.
Yeah.
All throughout the United States.
Well, isn't the problem that we're just not taxing this? Is that the problem?
Well, it's beyond that. I mean, yes, absolutely. But what I'm talking about, three things that are distinctive, because a lot of times the religious will come back if you say, hey, we should tax them. Their automatic response, and it's somewhat valid, to say, yeah, well, your 501c3 nonprofit is not taxed to a large degree, so quit your whining. But here's three things in the tax code that are unique to religion. One is they don't have to file a 990. So it's like a financial black box, what they have. I mean, if you've got a 501c3, probably many people, your listeners, are volunteers or
none of our people know what that
means. Yeah, they don't.
They're waiting for jokes and masturbating.
So nonprofit organizations, they have to report. They have to open up their finances. They have to do this through a 990 and other financial disclosures. Churches are much less obligated to do that. So that's one. Then the other one, which passed under Reagan, which I find just totally infuriating, is they passed a law saying that only a high IRS official can authorize an audit. Now, trust me, you as an individual, any old IRS official will do to audit you or your business or your 501c3 nonprofit, secular nonprofit. But churches, it has to be a high IRS official. And unfortunately, and this includes Obama, sadly, the IRS is just not doing it. So churches just get away with murder. There's nobody auditing
literally
them. They have the black box of finances. And then the ministers say, woohoo, I'm going to say X amount is my housing. And by the way, when I say housing, I'm talking about your internet, your home maintenance, everything. That's called housing.
Exactly. Wow.
Well, yeah.
There's no question that the government is fucked. And every time I talk to someone as well-read as yourself on these topics, it just makes me embarrassed to be American. I can't.
It's the greatest country in the world.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard this. I've heard this many times. But you never hear that from people in Sweden, I'll tell you that.
No, my girlfriend's Swedish.
Well, is your girlfriend pissed off?
Yes, she's.
I'm
going to
get out the flag.
Is your girlfriend a woman?
Wave that flag for America. We're the ones who came up with separation of church and state. We're the ones who, you know, put in.
You know,
the
whole we're free and separation of church and state. Why is it we ended up being one of the least free countries in the world? And why is it we ended up being one of the most religious infused governments in the world? I mean, it seems like coming up with those two tenets as a foundational aspect of our society has completely spun us the other fucking way.
I don't think that's why. I
want to say the word
what I
right
call the
no
religio-industrial complex. They get together and the corporate elite, Exxon is subsidizing groups that say that you know you should engage in climate denial based on religion. Now, do I think the executives at Exxon really buy the religious crap? No, but they say, nice. Good advantage for us. Let's help out these religious loonies, buy this stuff, and the religio-industrial complex knits together. You look at Romney and who he works with. Mm-hmm. They love it. They love that combination. They love people saying, let's deny climate change. And what we need to do, and it's a tough challenge with the Supreme Court as it is now, but we need to get involved in – we're not even in the game. And that's what I talk about organizing. So expose what's happening, the abuse of these religious hucksters out there, and then organize in your state. So we've got some kind of statewide secular group holding a convention at least every other year in Idaho. Just have it there, and you can have an effect.
You know, the way you're pointing your finger at corporations does not sound very libertarian to me, sir. Do you not understand that the goddamn – they're the ones that make this country, son of a bitch. Now, I don't know why the libertarians are Southern because they're not. But I don't do a good impression of Penn.
Yeah.
So,
oh, come on. You hung out
now,
with him.
I
can't do a good impression.
I noticed something. I just wanted to point out part of a challenge we've got here with a figure that Sean threw out here. Look at the fact that here we are at TAM, or were at TAM a week ago, depending on who's listening. We've got 1,200 people at TAM.
Exactly.
Approximately.
This is the big
now,
one.
That's fantastic. To get 1,200 people together, critical thinkers, 1,200 people to come to Vegas.
How many
meet,
chicks?
And this is an annual thing.
How many
and
chicks?
There's other
I need to know how many chicks.
And there's other conferences across the country with similar values. Yeah. TAM is not an atheist meetup. It is secular in nature, typically.
If you're a skeptic and you're not an atheist, you ain't doing it right.
That's an entirely separate argument. But point is, this isn't even an atheist thing. This is about people who are critical thinkers, some of whom are religious, but generally on the same page on these issues. So we got 1,200 people here annually, somewhere in that range. And you're talking about the hundreds and hundreds of megachurches that are classified as more than 2,000 people every Sunday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is our challenge.
I was out in rural Minnesota, so not Minneapolis, St. Paul, with a friend
Running
of mine.
Out?
We're on a lake.
Whereabouts? She's from
those parts. I don't know, about an hour south.
Mankato?
I was on some lake and drinking a beer. I don't know what the heck. But I was talking to this woman.
10,000 of them, so it could be anywhere.
Chatting with her, and she was talking about her church. And this is, you know, to me, kind of out there, country roads kind of thing. And, yeah, she's talking about they got 2,000 folks who show up in their church on an average Sunday, and you're thinking that would be the biggest secular convention.
Right.
You know, and
that's
just like peanuts compared to Joel Osteen's outfit where, you know, they got 30,000 people, or whatever the crazy thing it is down there in Houston. Mm-hmm. So, but the only thing you can do is start to organize, because to reverse this, back in the late 60s and early 70s, to their credit, religious right, they were out of the ballgame. Nobody cared. The Republican Party paid no attention to the religious right back then. Barry Goldwater said, I have no respect for them. He was Mr. Libertarian Republican.
Yeah, look,
they weren't
look
players.
Where he got.
They made themselves players, you know, and we need to do it.
Do you think there will ever be a secular president?
I'd love to
States?
Say whether there's going to ever be a secular president, but, you know, that's it for the free hour. We'll have to do this in the premium portion of the show.
I'm sorry if you're
a listener who's not paying. You know, you can.
This may have been the most important show we've ever done.
Why do you say that?
Because we're really encouraging.
Oh, right, all the space Dawkins jokes.
Yeah,
that's it for the free hour.
Because I was on it. That's why
we will be making the full 90-minute show available to our premium subscribers later tonight. I want to thank my guests, Running Elk,
hey,
Jarrett Lennon-Kaufman, and Sean Faircloth.
Thank you.
Don't go anywhere, guys. We're doing another half hour. I also want to thank my co-host, Heather Henderson, and Dissident Radio. Tune in next week when our guest will be...
How do I know? We're taping at TAM.
And we'll be talking about...
TAM stuff.
This has been the free version of episode
76.
If you would like to hear the full 90-minute show, please go to ardentatheist.com/premium and subscribe for a measly $10 a year. I am your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson, our theme music courtesy of the sound editor of the Aristocrats, Eric Wilson. And special thanks to our Wall of Reason moderator, JR, so far away, Swam, and our digital publicist, Cameron, sitting right here, Winters.
Some characters mentioned on this podcast are completely fictitious. Any resemblance to real persons living or dead is purely wishful thinking. You've been listening to Ardent Atheist on Dissident Radio. Ardent Atheist is a product of natural selection. I really shouldn't finish out the show with a bagel in my mouth.
Really? Talking and chewing.
New Dissident Radio. Listen before it's illegal.